first.
The Wire.
So, Julie Zhu and Nei Hung Lee, directors of the short film Myth of the Model Minority for TVNZ. I talked to Julie on the representation of Asian New Zealanders and where she hopes the conversation around migrants in the diaspora shifts to. Nei Hung and I talk about being the token minority and Dominion Rose as a safe space for ethnic minorities.
So, Myth of the Model Minority is a collaborative anthology film created with a community of writers and actors who all identify as Asian in Auckland. And the stories are, so it's set in a Chinese restaurant on Dominion Road over one night, and the camera kind of follows different tables, and each table has a different story, and all of those stories have been written by different writers. So it's kind of a collection of different moments that might all happen at the same time, just to kind of show that those of us who identify as Asian don't, although we're portrayed very singularly on screen, sometimes we live very complex and different lives, so kind of showing a multiplicity of experiences of what's termed as the model minority.
Because what's the creative process been like so far? Because there's a lot of actors, a lot of different stories in the piece, eh?
Yeah, we wanted our process to be really collaborative. So we did like a big call out, and we did a community hui first before the project, before the process was even decided, really, just to kind of have the community in mind and to ask other people what they thought that the film should be like. And when we did the call out for submissions, we got a huge amount of people submitting ideas. And same when we did the call out for auditions, we had lots of people wanting to be part of it as well. So it's been really cool seeing like all the different voices hungry to tell stories will be part of telling stories.
Yeah, because I just watched it before, and it's so nice that there's different languages just kind of flowing in and out, and there's such a great like age range as well.
Yeah, we wanted it to cover a broad range of experiences. Like often when we hear of Asian stories, like a very common trope, or not trope, but a common way of portraying Asian stories is often focusing on like Chinese stories. So we really wanted to make sure there were a broad range of Asian identities within this restaurant. Although it's a Chinese restaurant, we have lots of different ethnicities, languages, and also, like you said, age, just to show that lots of us, I don't know, belong to this community, and it's not a monocultural or one perspective within this community.
Yeah, there's a lot of different kind of identities that you touch on. So there's like stories about sexuality, there's stories about like different minorities within that. So yeah, what came across trying to be reflective of the whole wonderful encapsulating multifaceted identity that we all are?
Yeah, I guess so. Same thing, like when we're talking about Asian stories or stories of migrants, a lot of the time the actual story of that is portrayed as like a cultural clash or being about racism and stereotypes. And although those are things that we definitely face as a community, we didn't really want the stories to kind of rehash those tropes. We wanted to take it like a little step further and show that we face lots of other issues like sexuality or relationships with our parents or grandparents, or, you know, all these complex issues that kind of everyone faces, but we may face them in a slightly different way because of our cultural backgrounds as well. So, yeah, I think that was important for us.
Yeah. My favourite scene was the scene with the tea.
Yeah.
The granddaughter pouring it.
Totally.
Yeah, I loved it.
Something that, like, for example, you would only get if you had some sort of, like, had that cultural background to know, which is really cool. So, although people might get it or, like, take something away from that scene, even if they aren't Chinese, being Chinese and understanding what that tap on the table means gives it, like, something more. So it's cool that we're able to use these kind of coded language signals to communicate.
And what are your thoughts on, I guess, the representation of Asian voices so far in New Zealand? Like, how is it?
Yeah, I mean, Asian voices, well, Asian people have been in New Zealand, you know, from the 1800s, but we haven't seen that represented into the mainstream of Aotearoa for a long time, and still not even now. And I think when we do see it, we see representation of Asians as, like, quite a limited view. So we see ourselves maybe in the news portrayed a certain way, usually negative, or when it's us telling stories. Because we have had such limited representation, often it's quite at a basic level where we're just trying to show people that we're not these stereotypes. But hopefully after we kind of progress past these stories about how we're not just stereotypes, we can tell more complex stories that don't always revolve around identity, even though identity stories are also important.
And where do you hope conversations about the diaspora and about migration heads to in our current climate?
That's such a hard one. I hope that in light of what's happened recently with Christchurch, that the wider mainstream middle New Zealand, whatever all that is, I hope they're ready to listen to the fact that all of us who have been talking about racism or how we feel about xenophobia or anti-immigrant sentiments, I hope they do see how all these things are connected. I hope there's a genuine push to want to be anti-racist and not just not racist, for people to learn that racism isn't just about being mean to an individual, but it's about how the system, and that includes the media, oppresses or limits how certain groups in society can participate. And I just want more people to be able to be aware of all that and be willing to kind of dismantle all the systems that do hold some of us back.
I just really liked all the diversity that was just, you managed to cram in just short 13 minutes. Which says a lot.
I feel like it's short. I feel like it's a little bit too long, but hopefully it's
no, I wish for more. That's why head, when I saw it floating around in my head, I was imagining an hour long thing. That's why I was I'm going to binge watch it. And then I went on and I was it's...
Oh, yeah, when you said binge watch, I was there's one episode.
I know, you must have been this girl doesn't know what she's talking about. I just, in my head, I envisioned an hour long piece.
True. It would be really cool, though. Yeah. To the first series. Yeah.
And if there's anything else you want to add or you want a message or anything you want to clear up.
Oh, maybe one thing. I think one thing I did want to say was something, you said something about diaspora. What do I want diaspora to know? I think something else I want audiences to take away, audiences who do belong to these diaspora communities or heritage, is also re-look at how to reflect on our responsibilities living here in Aotearoa as well. So having that acknowledgement that just because we've faced discrimination doesn't mean that we automatically can claim we have a right to be here too, but we also are complicit in issues against Tangata Whenua, so having that as an element was really important, at least for me in the film.
The Wire.
I begin by asking director Nehung Lee what and who the model minority is.
So the model minority is this term which is kind of given to sort of an Asian demographic where they're kind of seen as the ideal minority group and they're kind of higher socioeconomic class and they kind of, but that comes with all these implications that kind of aren't talked about, whereas the model minority, and maybe it's implied that they're not, that they're maybe more obedient or more submissive to a system, or maybe it's implied that they don't live lives that deserve to get talked about. And then at the same time, it comes with a whole other can of worms where the model minority stereotype is often used to pit minorities against other minorities to say, why aren't you doing as good as this model minority? Why aren't you just picking yourselves up by the bootstraps like this model minority? So it's kind of, I called my film Myth of the Model Minority because I think that term is actually incredibly dehumanizing to actual Asian people, but also it's really insulting to other minority groups, and it's a complete myth. And the film itself was designed to be a collaborative community piece. So the idea started when I was thinking a little bit about sort of representation of Asian people in short films and TV shows that I'd watched, and I was like, oh, I don't see myself in there. You see this sort of homogenous you know, kind of product.
I just think of the Spray and Walk Away 30 Seconds guy. That's popped into my head first, actually.
Oh, no. So upsetting. So I thought about that, and then I also thought about my sort of pursuits to be a filmmaker, and I was thinking about how I had so much agency and power in being able to tell my own story, and how I'd like to give other people that opportunity as well. And also in addition to that, I thought about how I had lived a specific lived experience and I couldn't write on behalf of other people. So it was a big collaborative project where we asked the community, we did a public call out to ask people if they wanted to write for it, with the intention being each table at this Chinese restaurant was gonna be one writer's story, and then we would cast these stories and it was all gonna happen. And then we ended up having 14 writers and 40 plus actors. Yeah. So it was a big, big feat.
Because I loved just how diverse the stories were and how diverse the casting is. How was that process?
It was actually really interesting. Even though Julie and I work and we advocate and champion people of colour and Asian stories, we also had to consider our own implicit biases when sort of deciding who we wanted to, you know, uplift. We thought very strongly about our sort of East Asian bias as well, because Julie's Chinese and I'm Korean, and there are other, like, Asian is not an umbrella term that means everybody. I haven't heard Filipino stories. The South Asian voice often gets lost. So it was important for us to consider all those different communities within that umbrella of Asian. And then we also considered a wide range of age values. Also, Julie and I are specific age demographic, and we considered younger people and older people, and we just made sure that we had a wide swath of, like, an actual reflection of what Auckland is like.
Do you have any thoughts on how Asians are currently being represented in New Zealand?
Let me have a think. First question is maybe, are they?
I should have jumped the gun there. Are we?
I feel like I haven't watched much that kind of seem like I'm seeing Asian representation, particularly in, I think, film and television, because it feels like there's a bit of a gatekeeping process, and it's quite difficult for maybe Asian practitioners or Asian creative people to try and move up to get to that level. And I don't think that's me saying that there aren't young Asian people who want to get it to that level, but it just seems like it's a bit of a struggle. So, to answer your question, I suppose, it's happening, and I think it's happening slowly, and I think that we're in a position where maybe the tide is tipping, but there definitely just needs to be more. There needs to be more opportunity. There needs to be more opportunity to give young Asian creatives the opportunity to reach that level, and there just needs to be that support there, and it's just... That didn't answer your question.
No, I definitely feel you mean. Like, I just think back to high school where I went to drama camp in Napier.
Oh, my gosh.
And, it was a room full of white people. Yeah. Like, it's just what happens. And go to a room. It's like, I guess I am the token minority.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, yes, you are the token minority, but you also have your own feelings and thoughts and,
Well, I mean, that was what I was really conscious of as well when I was making Myth, because it was like, I didn't want anyone to feel like they were the token that person. Yeah. I wanted them to feel like this is the story that I hold very closely to my heart, and I kind of want to be given this small slither in this short film to be able to tell it. And in a similar way, I didn't want to pretend like I was writing a story and then to have a consultant from another culture, like, help me write the story, and they were like the token advisor. Like, I didn't want that. And it's a difficult place to be, I think, as an Asian creative in the arts as well, because you often are unsure about whether you are the token diversity pick or not. And I think it's quite conflicting, because it's like, do you lean into that and take advantage of that, or do you, like, just fight against that and feel like you're ticking a box in there list of strategies?
Yeah,
we just need to normalize it so much that they don't have to tick a box, that it's just normal for everybody's voices to contribute. To be honest, that's just going to make the industry stronger, and it's just going to make the product stronger as well, because you have a range of, like, opinions from smart people.
What made you want to sit it in a Chinese restaurant and have all the events kind of happen in one night. Like, what's behind that idea?
So it kind of, I just love, okay, I have such a soft spot of the shops on Dominion Road because they just don't give any fucks.
No,
like,
they don't.
You have terrible service. I hope this isn't too bad, but they have terrible service, like amazing food, and like the decor, like the lighting's always too harsh, and there's like weird stuff on the walls, and there's like 10 different like interior design styles, and it's such an affectional spot because it's also the spot that doesn't close, and it's also the spot that people of colour feel comfortable in hanging out and with the food of their comfort. So it kind of came from when I would hang out with my friends late at night inside Dominion Road restaurants, and you know a Dominion Road restaurant is good when it's got like a B rating.
And like my dad taught me, the lower the grade, the better.
Yes. And it's got a B rating, and there's like only Asian people in there, and you just know it's good.
Yeah.
Coupled with kind of this idea of eavesdropping, I was really interested in, because when you eavesdrop on someone, you kind of get to be a part of their lives for a really brief second. It's also so interesting because it gives you a window into a life that you would have never ever considered, and then they leave your life forever to continue on with their own life. So I kind of loved this idea of eavesdropping and also just like late night bants at like a Dominion Road restaurant. And you just kind of sit in a restaurant and you look at every single table and you just kind of think about all the intersecting lives in that one location.
Yeah. How has it been working with so many different voices and actors?
Everybody I worked with was really amazing, but administratively it was very difficult just because there were so many people to wrangle, and that was just the nature of the beast. Yeah. But I think the incredible privilege of this project was to be able to give people that wouldn't necessarily have had this opportunity an opportunity to kind of tell their story, or like tell a fictitious version of a story. So the start of Myth is actually like the like news clippings that have been smushed together in a montage. And I felt that it was a bit of an aggressive way to start, but I also wanted to kind of set this frame really early that like this rhetoric that exists in our media currently, or this rhetoric that exists in from people who aren't Asian talking about Asian people is actually like really weaponized. And that's the frame that we're entering initially when we think about Asian people, like the representation of Asian people. And I really, really wanted to start the film with outside voices speaking in, and then have the film be inside, like people within the community talking about themselves, to kind of create this contrast. But I thought it was really important, actually, to kind of start the film talking about how real-life institutions talk about Asian people, and, like, how that is a particular, you know, it's a jargon, or the type of language that they use is actually, like, way more aggressive than you realize.
Like, this is a bit of a bigger question, and I asked Julie yesterday, and she just sighed, she went...
That's very hard.
It's a big question. But what conversations do you think we need now moving forward? Given the events that have happened, given, you know, the growing alt-right white supremacy, you know, we have a lot of dialogues around that. Mm-hmm. And your piece is speaking to migration, to the diaspora. What do we need to talk about now?
Let me think about this for a sec. What do we need to talk about?
What needs to happen?
It's just, it's a big question.
Yeah.
I think we just need a little bit, but I think we just need to have a little bit more empathy for people, and even people that don't look like us or sound like us or live the same life as us. And I know it's a really simple answer, but I think when we lose the humanity of people, it leads to this division. And I might naively believe that film can create this empathy because you understand people's perspectives and you understand their lives. And it also feels so lofty. It's just like empathy. But I truly believe that just understanding people's perspectives and their lives, and understanding sort of their pain as well as, all the joys of their life is really important. And once we understand that within each other and different communities, it's hard to dehumanize people. And there's maybe naively there's still the power in art to kind of bring people together.
So how would you say your own relationship is with your identity growing up in New Zealand?
Have this hybrid identity, whereas I'm just speaking for myself, yeah. But where I feel like I'm not entirely part of like my Koreans, and I feel like I'm a, you know, an Asian New Zealander, but it's really, really hard because I am physically outward facing. Yeah. I look Korean, 100% Korean, and that's not something I can reconcile. Yeah. And people always see me as a Korean person when they first meet me. I think it's hard.
Have you ever got the question like, "Wow, you speak Kiwi so well?" Like,
I think I got it a lot when I was younger, and I got it a lot when I wasn't in Auckland.
Yeah.
But I think to be honest, in Auckland, it's like becoming more normal, or maybe people are becoming less overt about asking me straight to my face, and they just log it in their brain, like, okay, this is how she speaks. Yeah. I understand it. Have you?
Well, I always get people like, where are you from, Sherry? Like, but you sound so Kiwi though. Like,
oh my God.
And it's like, shut the fuck up. Like, I speak this well, and I have the privilege of having a New Zealand accent because I learned from a young age that that's what I need to not get bullied. Like,
fuck, I was exactly the same. So it was really interesting because my parents moved here like when I was a couple of months old, like literally baby. Mm. So technically my first language, and maybe yours.
Yeah, same.
Your first language would have been your like mother tongue.
Yeah.
So it was Korean until I was 5 years old. And as soon as I started school, it was like, I was like, fuck, like my defense mechanisms are like, I don't speak like these people. Like, I need to learn English so fast. And then I begin to prioritize English. And now it's a bit of a shame because my Korean's completely like deteriorated.
Mm.
And it's really, really sad to lose that aspect of your parents' identity, as well as something that actually is a part of my identity that I pushed away for so long.
Yeah.
Because, to be honest, I was like ashamed of it, and I didn't want to be picked on, and I didn't want to be different.
Mm.
And then now, like, people are like, oh, great, you know, you speak this so well. But it's attitudes like that that resulted in me losing my language, I think.
No, I used to, like, lie about being able to speak Mandarin, like, because a teacher would remember asking me in primary school, can you speak any other languages, and I was like, no, like, oh, no. just adamantly. But I think a lot of kids do that.
It's really hard. I've had a lot of people actually even lie about their race. A lot of, like, you know, like Thai, like Filipino people kind of lying about,
because there's a weird hierarchy that exists even in the Asian community.
Mm-hmm.
Like, which is problematic, right? But it's
totally
like colorism exists in Asian communities
as
well.
Oh,
like,
my God, yes.
It's
really hard. For my master's film, I'm like trying to unpack all of these identity problems.
Identity politics, it's a doozy.
But like the tide is turning. You're in a place of where you get to create media. I'm in a place where we get to create